Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, we begin with the good martini, and first of all, the big headline in the Washington Post today, or at least among them, is that the gap between Democrats and Republicans heading into the midterm seems to be shrinking again. Democrats still in the edge, but the margin is shrinking, and there are a couple of different reasons for that, one of which is this. Although public activism has put pressure on Republicans and the National Rifle Association, the Washington Post ABC News poll suggests that neither party holds an advantage in support among the 42% of voters who say it's extremely important that a congressional candidate shares their views on the issue. Within this group, three-quarters of voters who prioritize enacting new gun laws support Democrats for Congress, while 8 in 10 of those who give protecting gun rights greater significance support Republicans. As a whole, the group splits nearly evenly, with 47% supporting Democrats and 46% backing Republicans. So, Jim, this is good in a couple different ways. This is motivating the conservative base in a way that I would hasten to point out that perhaps Congress and the president aren't necessarily doing on their own. And it's good to know that Republicans can stand strong on the Second Amendment without thinking that it's going to mean instant defeat.
Yeah. Look, if you are familiar with the dynamics of the debate over guns going back, say, a decade, 2 decades, 3, 4, 5 decades or so, you see a common pattern recurring. Most gun control initiatives, depending on how you word them, poll pretty well, particularly if you say, don't you, we just want sensible gun control initiatives. You know, most people, nut jobs getting their hands on guns. Good heavens, you know. And then once they're put in practice, people, don't like it. What's more is that generally the support for gun control tends to be about a mile wide and an inch deep. There are a lot of people who support gun control ideas, proposals, waiting periods, things like that in general. But they may or may not be willing to vote on it. That's probably not going to be their preeminent issue heading into the election. Now, it's entirely possible that something like the Florida shooting would genuinely make a severe and significant change in the mindset of the electorate. But we didn't really see gun control become this defining issue in 2000 after the Columbine shootings in 99. Now, it's possible that, in fact, you could argue that it ended up hurting Al Gore in states like Arkansas and Tennessee and places like that. Could the Florida shooting cause some sort of sweeping change in the electorate's thinking on gun control? It could. I just don't think that's likely to happen because we've been here before. We've had school shootings before. We've had Newtown. We had the Las Vegas shooting, which seemed to disappear in the public mindset fairly quickly. So the idea that the 2018 midterms would set up perhaps a significant polling majority or even a sizable amount of the electorate that has shallow support versus a smaller share of the electorate, but that has very impassioned support, guess what? The impassioned side tends to win on that. That's how you start seeing Colorado state lawmakers get recalled in taken out in recall elections and things like that. So America's gun owners are really, really determined to keep their guns and to have their Second Amendment rights protected. On the other side, you have a lot of people who are kind of casual gun control voters who will answer a pollster this way, but who may or may not vote on it. So this poll to me, Greg, says that we're actually kind of reverting to the mean. We are getting back to the quote-unquote normal setup of American politics when it comes to guns, which is an extremely impassioned number of gun owners and Second Amendment advocates, and a very casual, perhaps even conceivably larger group, but less motivated group of gun control supporters. And this has turned out to be a losing side of the fight for gun control supporters for a long time. Remains to be seen how this shakes out. But if you're a Republican, that's a better result than you're expecting from polls like this.
Certainly. All right, let's move on to the bad martini now. And we know who Jim Comey's going to vote for later this year. I'm not exactly sure where he lives, but he has said that he doesn't actually want impeachment in an interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. He says that would be short-circuiting the process and that the American people don't want President Trump, who Comey says is morally unfit to be president. Well, then they're the ones who elected him, so they should be the ones to remove him, and they need to make their voices heard at the ballot box. So for a guy who thinks Trump is unfit to be president, you can only guess which way he's going to go. But he did a big splash with George Stephanopoulos yesterday. I'm sure many more interviews are coming. The book officially releases tomorrow. In some of the material for ABC News, they talked specifically about Trump. They talked specifically about the Hillary Clinton email investigation. And here's the part that's probably going to make most conservatives gag here when George Stephanopoulos asked Comey about his virtue.
At any point over the last 2 years, did you fall prey to that? Did you fall in love with your own virtue?
I don't think so, but I worried about it constantly. And the guardrail for that, because that's a big worry I have about myself, was to surround myself with people who will hit that, hit at the certainty, hit at the pride, to make sure I've thought about things well. But at the end of the day, you got to look at yourself in the mirror, and you've got to make the decision, the right decision, but most of all, for the right reasons.
I didn't get carried away with my own virtue, Jim. I just always did the right thing for the right reason.
You know, Greg, people have asked me, James Comey, are you too introspective? And I've thought about that a lot. I actually went up to a tall cliff out in the wilderness and looked out upon the horizon. And I, you know, the kind of place where they filmed those Levitra and Cialis commercials. And I just looked out at the sunset and asked, you know, James Comey, are you doing the right thing? And George, I concluded that I was. He's just, I've never found a guy where even when I agree with him, I can't stand him so much. I think most of his decisions during the election can be pretty well understood and justified. A lot of people don't like them, but I think even the decision to not prosecute Hillary, he's not giving the answer I expected he would. He's like, look, I was not going to recommend indictment of the Democratic nominee 2 weeks before the Democratic convention. By putting it out there, he put it out for the public to decide. But he intends, no, he just felt like, and you know, at one point, George Stephanopoulos. By the way, Greg, let's pause. George Stephanopoulos, longtime aide to the Clintons, right. $75,000 donor to the Clinton Foundation, was interviewing James Comey and asking Comey, weren't you a little too tough on Hillary Clinton? This is why you should not make a really well-known political operative your main anchor on political news. And ABC News made a terrible decision with this. I know George Stephanopoulos is convinced that he's objective. I know he thinks he doesn't take sides. I think we're now at the point where this is like background radiation permeating the water there. There's nobody else that I would have said Cuomo, but I guess probably that would have been the similarly bad choice for lead interviewer. But Stephanopoulos says, why not do a one-line sentence and just leave it at that? I mean, Greg, could you imagine if 2 weeks before the Democratic convention, there's a one-line statement issued by the office of the FBI director saying, we have not found any criminal intent and thus will not be prosecuting Hillary Clinton on any of the emails? The reaction would have been volcanic. And Trump would have been saying this was a fix. I think a lot of people right of center would have been saying it was a whitewash. And for the FBI, look, we now know because they released all the notes from the FBI investigators, Hillary Clinton was saying, I can't recall more than an Alzheimer's patient. OK, I mean, she just was in a situation where she was not going to get caught lying to the FBI. So she simply said she couldn't remember things like whether she was ever briefed on how to handle classified information, which, oh, by the way, see, she signed documents saying that she had earlier at the State Department. But hey, who wants to bring that stuff up there? So again, this, you know, I the entire Comey publicity tour is going to get pretty insufferable. I was kind of struck by heavy questions from Stephanopoulos. If anything, maybe the good aftertaste to this bad martini is how much we're seeing people who want to agree with Comey, who clearly prefer him to Trump, reading his book, watching his interviews, and walking away saying, oh my God, is this guy insufferable? So that's our bad martini, Greg, but I think we could almost make it the good martini.
Yeah, exactly. I got a feeling CNN and MSNBC aren't going to be playing that don't impeach him clip very often over the next several weeks either. So very interesting. Get used to Jim Comey. It's just beginning. All right, on to the crazy martini now, Jim. And this kind of jumps off a little bit from our first martini with the gun debate and how it's been whipped up again as a result of the Parkland shooting and the intense activism of the students that we've seen a lot of. So now this is the editorial board of the Washington Post, with the headline, Give Lower Voting Age a Try. When D.C. Councilmember Charles Allen introduced legislation in 2015 to lower the voting age to 16, he was pretty much laughed down. He recalled the skeptical questions. How can you convince me that a 16-year-old is mature enough, smart enough, engaged enough? The bill died in committee. When the proposal was reintroduced this week, a majority of council members signed on as co-sponsors, and Mayor Muriel Bowser expressed support. One reason for the different reception and why the nationwide push for lowering the voting age has been reinvigorated is the thoughtful and influential activism of young people following February's mass shooting in Parkland, Florida. Upending decades of political tradition is clearly provocative, and the council should proceed carefully in deciding whether to allow 16 and 17-year-olds to vote in local and federal elections. Federal, a case could be made that 16-year-olds lack the life experience to make informed choices, but we think a more compelling argument can be made in favor of lowering the voting age as a measure that could encourage lifelong civic engagement. They point out that starting at 18 is a bad idea because kids go to college, which means they don't get started voting until they're out of college and they're already well into their 20s. They say that there's been good turnout in some of the local communities here around Washington where they've already lowered the voting age to 16 for local elections. And then they close by saying, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School students who watched their friends and teachers gunned down mobilized out of a conviction that adults had failed them and they needed to look out for their own interests. Maybe it would make sense to give them and their cohort a bigger say in their future. Jim, I think when you look at the actual depth of the arguments being made by their students, we should take a different approach. I'd be happy moving the voting age to 35, personally, but it's at 18 right now, and it's probably not going to go any higher. But the idea that 16-year-olds have more wisdom than the generations that supposedly failed them is just another liberal talking point.
Greg, you know when this would have been a good idea?
When?
1991, when I was 16 years old. They missed the window, and it's a terrible idea now. I'm only like half joking when I say this, because if you'd asked me at age 16, Jim, would you like to have the right to vote? Sure. Now, no, because, you know, that ends up diluting my vote. I like having the right to vote when I'm 18. Look, you're going to have to draw the line at some point, and you can point to smart 16-year-olds. I don't doubt that 16-year-olds exist that are bright and well-informed and you know, thoughtful and analytical and all, you know, perfectly capable of making an informed a good decision. There are also lots of 16-year-olds who are drooling morons, just as there are people above age 18 who are drooling morons, right? So it's always been, we got to draw the line somewhere, right? So 18, you can get drafted. 18, you know, some people strongly argue you should be allowed to drink at age 18. You know, we got to draw the line of adulthood somewhere. And if I actually do think the argument of it should be much more consistent, makes sense to me. You can be drafted into the military, or you can serve in the military. You can go and fight in Afghanistan or Iraq or Syria or someplace like that. You can topple a regime like Saddam Hussein's, but you can't crack open a cold one to drink, to celebrate, because, you know, you're still not 21 years old. But you shouldn't make this based on any one particular teenager, whether you agree with them or you could disagree with them. You should ask yourself, you know, are we going to really enhance our electorate, our democracy? Is the system going to get better because you lower the voting age? And if the argument is, well, this will get more 18-year-olds to vote, Greg, why are 18-year-olds not voting now? Right? I mean, it's very bizarre thing. Well, if we just lower it more, then the older people will want to vote more. And I don't think that's necessarily the case of that at all. I think, you know, we should treat it as special. And I think we should treat it as a big deal when you're 18, you're legally allowed to vote. I don't think lowering the age and making it like a Chuck E. Cheese prize or something like that is going to make it that much more appealing or something like that. So bad idea, D.C. Council, and your logic is not terribly persuasive, Washington Post editorial board.
How do you like this? Let's keep it at 18 if you join the military, but if you don't join the military, then you got to go by the Obamacare definition and you're adult at 26.
Ooh, I like that. I mean, there's two possibilities here, Greg. If we find the idea of young voters being uninformed and specious and arbitrary and not really, you know, we don't feel like they're making good choices, we can either go with an idea like that or some sort of variation of the Robert Heinlein Starship Troopers service equals citizenship mentality. I don't think that will be terribly popular, but I just thought I should put that on the table. Or, Greg, we can legalize pot. Which, oh, by the way, young voter turnout dropped a lot after they did that in Colorado. So all of a sudden, Republicans are like, wait a second. Okay, I think some upside to this idea. Heck, let's hand it out the day before, right? Let's just, you know, here you go, young people. Go enjoy it. Here's some Fritos. Here's some Doritos. Go enjoy yourself.
Oh, I like it. And we can move the voting day to April 20th because they'll all be stoned and it's right after tax day. It'd be perfect.
Oh, okay. All right, let's get on that, Greg. Here we go.
Jim, we've cracked the mystery here. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.